other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Hamburger Hank's Diamond Exchange. My name's Aaron here and their personal pals, Brick.
Hello.
Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
And Dave. Everyone did a Dave voice. Hi, I'm Dave. Oh my gosh. Today's episode is all about Mr. Miracle, which you have probably heard us discuss in the past. Actually, you definitely heard us discuss in the past. We talked about it quite a bit. This is a comic, another 12-issue maxi series from DC Comics. We're on a roll of those. Came out in 2017, I believe, through 2018 probably. Written by Tom King, drawn by Mitch Gerrits, with covers by Nick Darrington. Great covers. This is a book that I, a comic that I loved and talked about quite a bit in 2017, 2018, so much so that I got Dave to read it or start reading it, and then the affection spread. And Brick recently read it, and then we sort of reached a critical mass where Nico then had to read it, so we decided we'd do a discussion of it on the podcast. This will be interesting because I hadn't read it for about 2 years, I guess, so I read it all in one sprint last night and this morning. Brick, it's been a while. You finished it maybe half a year ago?
Yeah, it was summer.
Yeah, it's been sort of sitting around.
Maybe beginning of fall, it's been sitting around. Honestly, I forgot some of what I wanted to say. So I'll try. I took very few notes. I have four bullets here, and they're pretty lame. So I'll do my best to refresh myself as we talk.
Sure. Nico, you read it just recently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've had a preview of Nico's thoughts, and then Dave is still in the process of finishing it. Yeah. So Dave still has two issues to go, I believe. Oh, yeah. Dave has been gagged, we should say.
I mean, he usually is.
He prefers to podcast.
We just ungag him for episodes.
Yeah. Dave shows the podcast in a full GIMP outfit. It's really challenging, but we make it work. Lots of chains crinkling. Anyway, speaking of chains, Mr. Miracle, escape artist. This was a big comic for me because I love the New Gods. Jack Kirby's New Gods. I talked about it a couple episodes ago. I read the big omnibus this summer. I love those characters and those stories. And so when this issue came, when this series was announced, I was like, great, more New Gods, this is fantastic. And I also love Tom King. He's a writer that I really have enjoyed. I liked his run on Batman, and I had read his Omega Man series, which was also quite good. That was his first big sort of prominent thing, and so I was up for whatever he had to offer, and so this was a natural fit. I also like Mitch Gerrits's art, which is getting just better and better over the years, so this seemed like a natural fit, and I loved it. I ended up sort of really liking it. I of course had this story about reading issue four in a bar, and had the sort of metatextual experience of feeling the comic was talking to me and feeling a bit too close to the narrative of depression and self-hatred that sort of winds this whole thing. So it means something to me too, beyond just enjoying the story. It sort of affected me, and I felt it, I don't know, I guess I related to the story in certain ways. Not all, because there's things that go on that I don't have a lot of relationship to. But that thread for sure, self-doubt, self-criticism, self-hatred really does resonate with me. And so the kind of mantra of like dark side is standing in for depression is a powerful one. Nico, you have different thoughts on this.
Well, so I read it at the same time as I was reading Watchmen, and it does not pair well for Mr. Miracle.
Yeah,
with that. So like my main impression of Watchmen was that it was dense, and my main impression of Mr. Miracle is that it's sparse. It feels like it's two or three issues that are stretched to 12. Mm. And I think there's like two full issues that are just like them fighting while they talk about like mundane suburban stuff. The first time it was like, okay, I get it. And it kept going and going and going. And it goes on for like 12 pages. And then it happens again. And it's like, I mean, it just starts to feel like there's not a lot of ideas.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. The comparison to Watchmen is definitely unfavorable to Mr. Miracle. And in a lot of ways, and one of them is because they're both using the 9-panel grid, right? They sort of, Tom King is a big Watchmen acolyte and a big Alan Moore acolyte. So we can see that he wants to, I don't know, maybe not wants to, but is in some ways working on those same ideas. But where in Watchmen, the 9-panel grid is used to give you more information and to somehow manage the density of the story, in Mr. Miracle, the grid feels like it is meant to open that space and time up, right? To sort of have those, like, I think you're right, Nico. Those, a lot of pages are one thing happens, and it's eight panels of this of stasis and one panel of action, or two panels of action, or something like that. And you're just like, what's going on? But I really feel that sense of ennui or boredom, right? It's like everything's just like bored.
Yeah, I actually like those parts quite a bit for that reason, where it, you know, a lot of this book, I think, and this separate criticism buried in here as well, is it's using a character and a universe or whatever to tell what seems like a pretty personal story for the author, that that's just his medium. Whereas, you know, I don't think this is really a superhero story, yeah. but it's using superheroes to tell the story. I like those points in the book, because they do that very well, where like the both juxtaposition as well as like the disparateness of what they're saying and what they're doing is pretty stark. And I think the point could be made in two panels, but I don't think it would be made the same in two panels. I liked those parts.
Yeah, it feels deliberate, right? Like, it's definitely...
Yeah.
But also get Nico's sense of, like, if once you get the joke, that is the joke. Mm-hmm. That's the trick, and there's nothing else really beyond that.
Yeah, which is where I think some of my other criticism that falls into this is I am utterly lacking in the context I need to fully appreciate what he's doing in this book. I texted you however many times when I was reading it, like, what's this? Why is this? Who's this? Is this, do I need to know this? Like, I must have texted you 10 times while I was reading this, just trying to figure out what was happening. And I feel like those points, you can only, if I don't, it's one thing if you're using different tools to tell a story, but if some people just don't know, like, all those brushstrokes look the same to me because I don't know the difference,
right.
You know, and then it starts to feel cardboard, which is, it sounds like Nico maybe felt a little bit, and I can definitely see where it was. I think I had to like encourage myself to appreciate it sometimes.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about that. That's a good point about how much did you feel lost in terms of not the story, but in the context, like Bricky just mentioned, you know, were there things that weren't being explained that you felt you needed to know to better understand it? My sense when I read it the first time was you would be able to get enough of it without having to know the backstory of Mr. Miracle and the New Gods, but maybe not.
I think you get the broad strokes, but you don't get the subtleties. And this is always the problem, at least I have, with superhero comics. When things are doing new or exciting things with a comic, if you don't have if you don't have that point of comparison, you don't know. You know, like, I don't know what a great new Batman is because I don't know what the old Batman is. So I don't see the difference. And that's times 1,000 with Mr. Miracle. He's an escape artist, or he like was a fan of one and then he modeled it out. Like, I didn't understand any of it. So a lot of those complexities were lost on.
Yeah.
So instead, I gravitated towards the relationship stuff and the parent stuff and the depression stuff, which I still liked and appreciated, but I don't think I fully understood. And I don't think I was capable of it unless I knew more. And I'm not going to go read something else in order to like this more. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Nico, what was your experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's every chance that I don't have enough context to know what I'm missing as far as the context. So I mean, I just read it on its own. You know, and my only context was like that kind of section in the beginning where it's like, you know, like really fast kind of explains all of what happened, like with his, you know, given to the where the basically God and the devil like exchange babies for whatever fucking reason.
To stop the war, to create peace.
Right. But how does that do that?
Well, it's like it's a biblical thing.
it's like on its own merits, it doesn't make a lot of sense, except that I guess Darkseid like wants to confuse the issue of who can kill him because he believes in this prophecy, I guess.
Right.
So only his son can kill him. So then if he exchanges babies, I guess it's unclear really who his son is.
Right.
But it turns out that his son is his son, and it doesn't matter if it's like adopted or whatever. But yeah, I think for me the experience was maybe that would have added something, like having that context of different and more of a history of comics.
Like, I don't even know who Darkseid is. He seems like DC Thanos to me. I don't know.
Thanos is Marvel Darkseid. Like, that's Darkseid came first for sure, and Thanos was the ripoff of Darkseid. But yeah, same principle, like a big cosmic Satan.
DC is the Hydrox Cookies of the comic world at this point.
In that sense, yes. Technically, in that sense came first, but are like the less popular version now. Although the Snyder Cut, the Justice League movie is coming out on HBO Max sometime soon. It's going to be like 7 hours long and have Darkseid in it. If anyone cares or wants to see that, I don't, certainly.
No. No one cares. I don't think the people that even hounded for that
care. No, they just want the cause, not the product.
Q told them to do it.
They will still watch it, but it'll be atrocious.
That Venn diagram's close to a circle, right? Yeah. The QAnon people and the Snyder Cut people.
Totally.
Yeah. I think that's going to be deeply disappointing to everybody who wanted that. Yeah. It's going to be like, oh, wait,
he's not
that good.
I can't imagine wanting to watch any of those movies for 7 hours.
Did they do reshoots for that?
Yes.
I think they did.
I think the reshoots cost as much as the movie.
That's wild.
And like, I think they have a bunch of stuff that just didn't get effects added to it. So they're like doing that too, like adding the effects after. Yeah. I don't know. it's going to be a complete... The movie came out, the theaters was terrible.
Yeah.
I can't imagine this one being any better. No. Just having more shit is right. not... It's not a better meal. It's just right. more shit.
Yeah. So another thing that I found a bit kind of disappointing is like... Basically, the entire story, like taking it as without context, I guess, is about like that Mr. Miracle grows up. He was the child of God and he got sent to hell, raised by demons, marries another person who's tortured by demons. They have a kid. And then in order to stop the war again, he has to give his kid up to the same childhood that he got. And it was like, okay, like if he has to make that choice, this is what everything's leading up to. And then he goes to the meeting and he's like, okay, I'm going to give you my kid. And then he's like, just kidding, I'm going to punch my way out of it. And it's like, well, fuck. It seemed like it was like leading up to a thing like where you can't just punch your way out of it, because like even Mr. Miracle seems bored stiff by like punching things, you know. Like all of the fight scenes are like when him and his wife Big Barda are like talking about how they're going to redecorate their condo, and it's like they're so bored by fighting that they have these conversations about like boring suburban shit, right. And so it seemed like there was going to be another solution, but then there's not. It's just another fight.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. The only, I think, well, I don't know. It seems like part of that is that we're not sure what is real, right? And so,
yeah,
did he actually fight his way out, or is this just part of the sort of delusion that things can be okay now, right? Like Orion, in the last issue, the ghost of Orion says to Mr. Miracle, "Your disappointment because you all you want is the good side. You don't want the struggle. Like life is about struggle and complication, and all you want is reward. And this is why you're a disappointment." So yeah, I think you're right. Like the fight is disappointing. And I remember in the first time I was like, oh, this is just a exposition dump with some like action scenes. Although I do like the scene of him stabbing Darkseid through the head with a blade, because yeah, it's pretty intense. Yeah, then you wonder like, well, what actually happened? Even Highfather says the end, his ghost says to Scott, "You couldn't make the choice that I made. Like, I get it. I get what you didn't, but like, you aren't as good as I am. You never will be." And then he punches the ghost to be like, that's you, this is me, basically.
Right.
But yeah, like I think the last issue complicates that in an interesting way to me.
I did kind of feel like those little glitches were gonna add up to something, because it seems like he's infected with the anti-life equation, which is the most bullshit, like Deus Ex Machina, you know. Just, I mean, whatever the, it's not Deus Ex Machina, but what's that thing where it's just like kind of an unknowable glitch? It's like maybe the opposite of a MacGuffin, or the inside out of a MacGuffin, but just like it's like a thing that you can't even describe, you know. It's like and it seems like he's suffering from that, and that's kind of infecting his reality, but it doesn't really like come out. I don't know, it doesn't get explicit enough for me, I guess. What am I missing there, I guess, is my question.
Explicit meaning, like, what are the consequences of the anti-life equation, or is the question like, is he actually infected with it, or is it not?
Yeah, all of the above, I guess.
Well, so the anti-life equation is controlling someone's will, right? Like, that's what it means, is like the ability to control someone's will and to assert your own will over them. And so it's like a mind control thing, basically. So if Scott is affected with anti-life, that means that he is... I mean, anti-life is just metaphor for depression in this case, right?
It's just depression, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like lost his will. He's acting out of mechanical sort of sense of obligation, not out of any sort of desire to do anything, really. Those glitches, I think, are your reminder, like just like the Darkseid is panels, they're like your reminder that this isn't real. The experience of depression isn't the experience of your normal self. This is an altered sort of version of perception, right? You are depressed, you're not feeling like yourself, and so you're seeing things and feeling things a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the issue two or three, I think it's maybe two, when maybe it's issue one, actually, when the Darkseid is panels add up. Like the first page has like one.
Is that the interrogation
maybe
one?
Maybe so, mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's like all of a sudden the whole page is black. And you're like, yeah, so it's just like it takes over, right?
I thought the depression stuff was handled very well.
Yeah. His sense of boredom and his sense of like, well, even the stuff about like when he's fighting in issue two or three, I think it's issue three, he's fighting for Orion and Orion's like, do this, do that. And he's like, okay, I'll just do it. He keeps doing it, but doesn't feel any desire to win. He's just executing the motions, right? Even as Highfather, he seems like pretty done with the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the last issue, the question is he actually infected with anti-life, or is this reality, right? Is he hallucinating things? Is he sort of lost? And it's like, is he actually dead? And this is heaven or hell? Like, what's the reality? And it seems like this time I was, because the first I read, I was like, I don't want it to be a question mark, right? I want to know for sure what happened to Scott-Free here. And I was frustrated that the end last sentence, it seemed like the answer was, you'll never know, which ties to Watchmen in some ways.
What'd you think this time?
I think he actually is dead. Hmm. I think that the last bit when he says, I can always escape, and she said, can you, is like accepting the reality of I just died and this is what I'm living with, right? But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seemed like the cues pointed towards death this time, that everything, when Metron comes and says, like, you can't see the face of God, like, you're not supposed to, and he does anyway multiple times, and it's like, okay, he must have then actually died.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you go think about the ending?
I don't know if I think he died.
I just took it as, like, I didn't put a lot of reading into it, I guess, just because I was like, okay, so the same, you know, he's like, there on the couch with Big Barda again, and I don't know. I didn't look that much deeper, just because a lot of that kind of anti-life stuff is so buried that it's tough to even. It's like it's, and I guess what I mean by like unknowable, that it's unknowable, is like its effects are, could be anything, you know. So like you could put anything as the anti-life isn't a metaphor for that, you know, and it kind of fits because it's not anything specific. And I think also part of my problem is that it's one of those things where I guess a really good book about depression is depressing, and a really, really good book about like maybe the mundanity of suburban life is mundane.
I don't know if I agree with that. It's pretty pointedly about depression, but I think this, I'm not sure about the ending, but the speaking from personal experience, the flavor of depression changes as you age. You learn to live with it, and it changes the sort of two kind of poles of how you feel tend to merge. It still moves in waves or whatever, and it feels like he's going through that process, right? Where he's not, instead of like fighting one against the other, he's sort of finding a way to sort of find peace just with how he feels, and balancing sort of like the expectations that he puts on himself about what his destiny should be from birth, that are sort of narratively made external because he's a superhero, but in reality they're not actually, they're his own things, right? And he's kind of learning to manage all that, and then in the end he just sort of, he's like, yeah, I stared in the face, you know, so it doesn't, whether that stuff actually happened or not, I don't think really matters.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Ghost of Oberon basically tells him, like, he says some line like, do you think that the world out there that you're supposed to live of superheroes and endless crises and sort of conflict is any more real than your life right here with your wife and your kid? Like, that's not true. They're both real. And then one of the last lines on the last page when he says, like, Barda says, Darkseid is, and then Scott says, yeah, that's true, but so are we. Like, sort of like this idea of like, you can still live with depression and not have it rule your life. You can sort of be a complex person and still feel happiness when you can, and also still go through struggle and depression at the same time too.
I thought that was depicted pretty well.
Yeah. And I found those ghost visits really moving. That last issue, even though I was worried about the possibility of a question mark ending, I really did think those encounters were affecting, and sort of seeing how everyone's take on Scott was somehow right. They all knew it. He was kind of a disappointment, he was kind of a failure, but also he was a good person, he tried his best, like, he was in heaven, he was in hell. It's all kind of there, which I really did like.
We should talk about the art before
I should talk about art. Yeah, Mitch Garrett's is the artist here. I love the art. I think it's so good.
It's the best part.
Yeah. Little details like the action lines, those little like white little motion lines are really fun. They're kind of like quirky, but really cool. All the digital distortion is very effective, right? All the squiggle lines and the static lines on the panels work for me. Yeah, I think he's great. It's realistic in a way that Dave Gibbons's art isn't realistic. I mean, Dave Gibbons' art is super realistic, I think, on Watchmen, but Mitch Garrett's is a different kind of realism. It's more
highly
like
stylized.
It's like video realism, right? It's like captured through surveillance cameras, whereas Gibbons's feels like a film being made, right?
Yeah,
it's excellent. I think he's great.
Yeah,
I love the depiction of Barda as being this like just enormous woman. She's so big and strong, and Scott is like svelte next to her. He's still a superhero, but he's like looks like scrawny compared to her. She's like this massive bruiser. When he shows them all sitting on the couch during the interrogation scene, like Barda and Light Ray and Fastback just trying to like fit in this one couch, and just like the mundanity of these like gaudy superheroes crammed into a den trying to share a vegetable tray.
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. I like that her name is Big and her last name is Barda.
Yeah, on her sonogram, when they have the second child, it says Barda/Big.
Yeah.
And then in parentheses, God, and then F. The bit where she gives birth and they have to cut the umbilical cord with a knife made of Darkseid's flesh or whatever is really interesting. Or made of a god's flesh or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I like that detail too. That's like comic nerd shit about like, how would you how would Superman like have a child, basically, whatever. I like the solution of that.
Yeah.
I also really like the panel. Like, it always sticks to the 9-panel thing, but sometimes it has 3 panels work as one with bars in it, and it just looks, it's a cool effect.
It's different than how Watchmen works with it, but it is its own thing. This time I noticed there's a story in one of the negotiation scenes. Scott and Kanto, the assassin from Apocalypse, walk to the bathroom, and Kanto tells him a story about Da Vinci. He's like, yeah, I used to live in Renaissance Italy. I had a thing with Da Vinci for a while. He told me the story about the master and the apprentice. The story is like they have a paint off, and the apprentice's painting is like realistic grapes so much that birds come and eat them. And he's like, obviously I won. And the master's like, what is your painting? He says, pull back your curtain. And the master says, what curtain? Right? I felt like that reading this time, having just read Watchmen, was like, oh, this is Tom King acknowledging that he's not Alan Moore. This is the tell that he's like, I'm trying to do something similar. I love this book and I want to be just as good, but I acknowledge that I have nowhere near as close. Like, and I really felt that. Like, as much as I like Mr. Miracle, reading next to Watchmen, I was like, oh boy, everything else just pales. It's so good. Mm-hmm. That should be the challenge, right? Is to make things as good as that, right? And to keep upping your game. But yeah, it really does. I don't envy any comic being read after a Watchmen deep read. Nothing's going to stand up to the same scrutiny. I kept trying to read it the same way I was reading Watchmen, and it's not fair because there's like, you're not, those transitions aren't there. The little meta games aren't as there. There are some, but not as many. So just like, you just are looking for things that aren't there.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad I didn't read them together.
Dave, what do you think? Take the gag out, unzip Dave's hood. Okay. Well, listeners, tell us what you thought about Mr. Miracle on Twitter at YakBabies, and also email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts and share them there. Also, find us on Patreon. Patreon.com/YakBabies is where you can get our secret bonus podcast for $1 a month. You can get access to all our fun hijinks. It's a fun stories being told there, games being played, emies, Broda Bros. It's a good time. And also our merch.
Confessions.
Yeah, too many. Actionable confessions, for sure. Just going to say, you can find our merch on Twitter as well. In our Twitter bio, there's merch there for sure. Until then, Yak Babies yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all the loyal listeners, and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, and William Howard Taft.